You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Rondo! 8:06 on a Wednesday, hump day. Tell me that General Kelly's not funny. Calls that dude a nerd because he knew technology stuff. He didn't. That's hilarious, man. You don't hear that every day from the Chief of Staff of the White House. Joining me is Captain Lauren Serrano. Lauren, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Do you think that there should be a commercial coming out pretty quick?
Sure.
We're the 911 force now for the White House, the Pentagon, right? Do you think at some point that's got to be a commercial?
I think it absolutely should. I'm surprised it's not already.
I know. Like, we take great pride in our commercials in the Marine Corps. Like, what is it? J. Walter Thompson is like, yeah, we've been doing this for a long time. We know how to make a commercial to include the dude slaying the dragon for all the dorks out there. And, yeah, that's big stuff. So, I mean, come on. We just, like, took over the White House, and we, like, Kelly gets done with his swearing in. 12 seconds later, Anthony Scaramucci has walked out of the premises. It's awesome.
I know. You'd think there's an insurgency going on at home or something, right?
There might be. When we take it over, like when Trump looks at Kelly and says, John, get Dunford out of here. And Kelly says, that's not going to happen today, Mr. President. In fact, Lance Corporal, get him and his bad haircut out of here. All right, let me have everybody's attention. All right. First of all, Lauren, we have to meet you and get to know you.
Okay.
Before we talk about your iconoclastic writing, you born and raised where?
San Francisco, California. Well, just north of it, in Marin County.
Marin County. Whoa. The cradle. What did we call that? The cradle of what?
I don't know. Liberalism,
maybe.
Hippies.
All of the above.
They call it the Northern Beverly Hills, as I've heard it called too. Whatever you want.
All right. So you grew up there. How does the Marine Corps? Where do you go to college?
At Drexel in Philadelphia.
Oh. So you go from San
Francisco. Yeah, you need to away from Marin.
No kidding. So you go from San Francisco, Marin County is different from San Francisco. San Francisco is really a pretty conservative. You wouldn't know this, but there's like old California, like money in San Francisco. And so there's elements of San Francisco that are extremely conservative. And then there's the other side of San Francisco that tends to get much more publicity. But one of the most beautiful cities in the world. And I tell you, if you ever want to go have a great time, San Francisco is an incredible city, beautiful, beautiful places, incredible architecture, museums, parks, things like that, and great restaurants. So I would recommend it. One of my three favorite cities on the planet. How about that?
Maybe I'll have to spend more time there. When I was 18, I kind of just left and didn't look back.
No, someday you should go back to the city, mind you. And but San Francisco, New York City, and Hong Kong, all to me very similar, cosmopolitan. They all speak English or some form of it, so it's all. I think it's easy to be a tourist there, and they're beautiful cities. But anyway, how does the Marine Corps? So you're going to college. How does the Marine Corps get on your radar?
Really, my dad. My dad pushed it hard. Not necessarily the Marine Corps, but military in general. His father died in World War II in the Navy in the Battle of Leyte Gulf, and my dad was only 6 months old. So that really kind of drove his identity as a child. He grew up as a, you know, bastard child back in the 40s and 50s, in, you know, when it was not okay to not have a father. And his mom, my grandma, was, you know, 19 and didn't have anything, but she was a widow for life because of World War II. And that really struck my dad.
She never remarried?
She never remarried. They were married for about a year or something when she was 18, 19. He died, and then for the longest time, she thought that he was going to show up somewhere on some deserted island in the Philippines, or, you know, for a decade or two after World War II, they kept finding you know, Navy personnel, like, hiding out with tribes and random Philippine villages, and she swore he was going to be one of them, but he never showed up. And, you know, she never remarried, and when she died a few years ago, we cremated her and buried her ashes, or spread them in the Pacific so she could be buried with the ship.
Oh, damn! That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome, though. What a great story. Whoa. I love your grandma. I don't even know her. What's her name?
Lula Pearl.
Lula Pearl, that's a good name.
Yeah, back in the 1920s it was.
It was, yeah. It doesn't sound like a woman who's going to stay unmarried for the better part of her life after she becomes a widow at the age of 19. Lula Pearl sounds like
right.
a girl that goes out on Wednesday night.
Trust me, my grandma did not. she had a lot of values, and, you know, being married back in those days was very important. And. You know, traditional, and getting remarried is, especially since she was Catholic, you know, getting remarried is not necessarily something she was, I guess, looking forward to do, even though it still surprises me that she's, you know, from 19 years old on, never seemed to have any sort of romantic encounter whatsoever, never had a boyfriend that we ever heard of, never talked about men. It was kind of incredible. But my grandfather's death in World War II sort of drove the values of that family and sort of like, you know, my dad's patriotism. And so my dad inherited my grandfather's GI Bill and sort of inherited this sense of, you know, service to your country and the need to participate in country events such as wars and, you know, do your part. And then my dad was going to join the service, but when he was in his late teens, he got in a horrible car accident and was crumpled underneath the dashboard of his car, actually. It's a miracle he survived. But he spent 2 years in Bethesda Military Hospital in the middle of the Vietnam War. And so even though he wasn't, you know, injured from battle, he was surrounded by all of those soldiers, airmen, Marines, you know, Navy personnel that were coming back from Vietnam and were in critical condition there at Walter Reed.
Okay, so let me ask you a stupid question. So because his father was killed in action, they retained medical benefits for life? Is that how that worked?
You know, I'm not entirely sure, but I mean, I guess he was still a teenager at the time, so he obviously still had some sort of medical benefits from his father's death. But he did have his dependent card, and, you know, for life, my grandma was able to go shopping at the commissary.
Right.
So, you know, she had some sort of dependent benefits. But it's interesting you bring that up, actually. Last week when I was home on leave visiting my father, he had managed to get his dad's service records from World War II recently, and we were digging through them together. And my grandmother got paid 6 months of my grandfather's pay when he died. That's what, like, the benefit was. That's their form of SGI back in the 1940s. And so my grandfather got paid $54 a month. So for my grandfather dying, my grandma got a check for $720. That's it. Are you kidding me? Like, today our SGI is like $400,000. But yeah, she got $720 back in 1944 for him dying.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holy smokes. That's
right?
It is incredible. And you think of the number of women across the country that, you know, that became widows at such an early age. You know, not to get sidetracked here, but I'm never afraid to do it. The other thing that I haven't been able to find out is, when did the United States begin doing Keiko calls? It was sometime, you know, late Korea or early Vietnam, but, you know, I mean, she got informed by telegram. You know, there's all, you know, you see in movies where the Western Union guy comes, you know, to the house, and you can hear the screaming, you know, from the house as he walks up, you know, the long driveway, because they know what the telegram's going to say. But that was the way you were notified. And it just seems.
Oh,
you know,
yes. Terrifying. So that telegram was actually in the service records that I dug through last week.
Wow.
It was heartbreaking. It was like three, you know, sentences long, and wasn't personal whatsoever. It was just like, sorry for your loss. He's missing in action. Like, we'll let you know if there's anything different. And then there is this heartbreaking telegram that my great grandfather sent back to the Navy that it's handwritten and was just like, I recently received the telegram that my son is missing in action, presumed to be dead. Like, if there's any possible way he's alive, like, please let me know. We are devastated over here. I know you're busy, but, you know, please send us any information, you know. Like, this is, like, super sad telegram of my grandfather, just or great-grandfather, like, begging the Navy to give him any information about it.
And was that in the record, too?
It was. It was in the service record.
Wow. So, yeah. So you, how did you guys get a hold of that?
My dad wrote to, like, I don't know, the Veterans, like, Service Record Agency or something like that.
Right.
We've been trying to, like, collect information on him for forever. And so we've just been pinging anybody that has information on service members. So when I was in the Philippines a few years ago, I went to the American Memorial in Manila there, where his name is on the wall of the missing, and they had a bunch of his service records down there too, so we were able to get some stuff from there. And kind of gathering it up all over the place.
So yeah. What did your grandfather do in the Navy? What was he?
He was a boilermaker, machinist, made second class in the Navy. Yeah.
Let me tell you, if you want a job that sucks. those are the guys when you go on ship and you see them, they wear blue coveralls and they're just covered.
Mm-hmm.
They're covered in grease and crap. And, you know, you'll see them, you know, in a line to eat or something like that. And, you know, you talk to them like, what have you been doing? Well, I was down in the so-and-so hold. What do you do down there? I watch a propeller shaft, you know, turn. And that's what they do to make sure the bearings don't overheat before they had electronic sensors for stuff like that. That's a, you know, folding chair, sitting there watching this thing. And hotter than hell down there. So, anyway, wow. That's a sad, heroic, common story of World War II.
Yeah, it really is. But it's interesting that my dad is 74 and he still tears up when we talk about his dad. You never even met him. And, you know, those kind of losses and the effects of war, you know, are ongoing for decades and really, you know, affect families for generations to come. And, I mean, he's a lot of the reason I'm in the Marine Corps today is because my grandfather, you know, went down in World War II, and that was, you know, a traumatic moment for my lineage and really dictated who my dad is, therefore who I am. So
you joined the Marine Corps because somebody got to pay.
kind of. But, yeah, no, when my dad was also in the military hospital for those couple years in Vietnam, they thought he was going to die, so they put him in the ward of, like, folks that were waiting to die. And he said there was, like, a variety of ranking folks in that room, mostly Marines and Army, and they were just – they had nothing – left. They had, you know, the ranks were thrown out the door, you know, all, you know, worries of, you know, responsibilities and all that other stuff was gone because they all thought they were going to die. And so he had some really intense conversations with those folks about what we were doing in Vietnam, you know, the state of the United States at the time, you know, what our foreign policy should be, like why we're involved. And, you know, his patriotism only grew from being there. But patriotism for wanting to do the right thing and wanting to make sure we're involved in wars for the right reason. And, like, and he said it was interesting. In that room, there were some really high-ranking folks and officers, but the one guy that had the most power was the corporal because he was the only one that was ambulatory in the room. So he could, like, kind of, you know, meander over to different beds and, like, give people their Jell-O or, you know, turn the radio up, or, you know, he's the only guy that had the ability to move. And so he was, you know, big man on the hill. And so it was interesting hearing my dad talk about, you know, that and how ranks don't matter when you're on your deathbed.
Wow.
But I grew up hearing these stories.
I mean, what an incredible experience for your father. I mean, to go from, you know, being raised without a father to that ward at Bethesda. Holy shit.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, who was in charge of, like, the juveniles medical care program? That person needs to get their ass kicked. wow. So you get pointed towards the military, or at least you're biased towards there. How's the Marine Corps get on your horizon?
It's, I think, for a lot of reasons that other folks say, is, you know, the most challenging. It's the one that's kind of got the most, like, factor to it. And I grew up always being told I could do whatever I want, that, you know, no ceiling is not meant to be broken, right, that you can be anything you want to be. I know it's an army term, but, you know.
Be careful, that's not
Well, whatever their phrase is, I don't know what it is. But
be all you can be. Okay.
Oh, that one. Yeah, right. You know.
Exactly. Right. I'm just telling you.
I wanted to be all I could be, but that didn't mean go to the army.
you're dancing near the edge. Just be careful. The Okay, so, and, you know, we have the coolest uniforms.
Obviously.
We have the coolest coolest fight song. I mean, we're the whole package, essentially. And
it was definitely kind of the whole package. And I mean, I remember going into the recruiting station when I was in high school, and it was like a mixed recruiting station where all of the different services were supposed to have a representative there, and the only people that were in were the Marine and the Air Force Airmen. And so I first went and chatted with the Air Force Airmen just to say hey. And I remember him describing to me what life in the Air Force would be like, and how cushy it was, and how much leave they had, and all the cool places I could travel, and it's not very hard work. And I remember that first sit down too, he showed me like an overview, like a footprint of like the barracks that we would be in. And he was like, yeah, you have your own bathroom, you have your own room, it'll be great. We've got, you know, the best benefits of any other service. And like, all he ever talked about was the benefits, and like, and how comfy it would be, and how it's the place for women, and how it would be the most friendly of the services, and, you know, all that. And I'm sitting there going, like, do you even know me, dude? That is not what I'm looking for. Like, I want to be challenged. I want to drag my ass through the mud and, you know, get down and dirty and really, really figure out who I am, what I can do, what I can't do, and be challenged. So I walked out of that Air Force person's office and was like, yeah, no. Walked straight into the Marine Corps office and just chatted with the recruiter there. And it was pretty obvious pretty early on that our personalities meshed. I liked who he was. He, you know, the first second I walked in the office, he had a pull-up bar and was just like, hey, before we start chatting, jump up on that bar. And I was like, I can't even do a pull-up, but no, try and hang here as long as I can. But, you know, I was immediately kind of humbled and was like, okay, this is going to be a challenging but worthwhile service to join.
So that's your first encounter. And mm-hmm. And now, did you talk to the other services after that? Or was it like, yeah, I'm going to be a Marine? Because let me just tell you, I didn't know anything about it. My dad was in the Army for 2 years, played baseball most of the time he was in. I grew up in California. He was in Major League Baseball. He becomes the manager of the Padres, so I come down to San Diego. And the only thing I know about Marines is what I've read about them, and I read a lot of history. My Scholastic book club selections were all like World War II, Guadalcanal Diary, and things like that. And then I come to San Diego, and now I see Marines. And when I mm-hmm. went to join the military, I get out of college, I go to work at Merrill Lynch, and I hate it. And the Marines are in Lebanon mm-hmm. at the time. And a Marine, who I later found out might have been intoxicated, captain, jumped up on an Israeli tank and pulled out his .45 and said, get that thing out of here. You're not cutting through our position. Well, I thought, you know what? That's what men do. Like, what am I doing uh-huh. here? What am I doing here? That's what men do. So I'm like, yeah, I need to join the Marine Corps. And so I never went and talked to another recruiter. I went down and I joined the Marine Corps. So I like you, I only had what I knew in my head and what I saw, and I was pretty impressed. And so
right.
So what year did you join the Marine Corps?
So I signed my initial contract in 2004 when I graduated high school. And my dad really, really wanted me to be an officer and go to an academy. I didn't even really know what that meant at the time. Like, I didn't know what the difference between an officer and enlisted is. Like, it just, my dad said, that's the way I should go. And I was like, all right, let's do that. So I applied to the service academies. And I mean, I guess what also dictated joining the Marine Corps is that I didn't get into West Point. I didn't even apply to the Air Force Academy. I got into the Naval Academy and they're like, deferred program or whatever, where you go to like NAPS for a year.
Right.
And then, and I was like, I don't want to do that. Like, it's all, And then, looking back now, I should have, but at the time I was like, screw that. I want to go direct in. And then ROTC picked me up, for a full Marine Corps scholarship, like, start immediately. And so I was like, well, I guess that's, you know, the signs are written all over for me that, you know, that's where I should go, I guess. So it's the only one I got into that I, can start immediately and really want to hit the ground running with. So I, took the Marine Corps ROTC scholarship at UPenn, and ended up going to Drexel. Probably wouldn't go back to Drexel, if I had my choice of colleges again. Should have gone to Georgetown, but I didn't want to be like my dad who had gone to Georgetown. I was a rebel and was like,
Who wants to be a, who wants to be a dork, right? Like your dad.
So I was like, I'm going to choose my own college and, you know, whatever. But it ended up being amazing because the ROTC unit at UPenn was fantastic. And, yeah, did a Marine Corps ROTC from the get-go.
Okay, so you come on active duty. How do you decide what do you want to be in the Marine Corps?
So I knew I always wanted to be in intel. I am kind of a dork. I do like, you know, analysis and thinking about problems.
Just so everybody knows, it is dorky stuff. Like the cool intel people that you that you see in movies, that's not normal.
Yeah, no.
No, they're the... They're doofuses. They're the kids in high school that are doofuses. They gravitate to intel for some reason. I don't really understand it, but it's the way it is. So.
Yeah. So that was kind of me. I was kind of a doofus, you know, kind of a dork, but enjoyed it. You know, I studied Middle Eastern majors and Middle Eastern studies and Arabic in college. So it kind of made sense to go the intel route. Even though I didn't really know what intel was, it just kind of seemed to be the one that
Why did you choose the Middle East thing?
Because it was the beginning of the Iraq War. At the time, the media kept talking about how we really lacked knowledge on Middle Eastern topics in general and Middle Eastern experts and Arabic speakers. And, you know, it just seemed to be the logical thing to do. And I enjoyed reading about it and learning about it. I mean, that what my future was at the time was going to look like going to Iraq. So I might as well, you know, get familiar with it.
And we're just over there crushing it too.
At that point we are, it's kind of like the wild, wild west era. And so that's all I'm seeing on the news. I'm sitting here in college and like eager to go, but you know, have to finish the degree first.
All right. So, so you come in, you become an intel, an intelligence officer, and then you become a foreign area officer, right? That's the designation?
The designation was actually HUMINT at first. Okay. Foreign area officer is secondary MOS.
Explain to everybody what HUMINT is.
HUMINT is like the collection of foreign information via humans, like using other human beings to get information. It's a fancy way of saying it. Basically, just talking to other people, picking their brains, knowing what they know, and then writing a report and sending back. So,
You know, I learned a lot about intelligence that honestly that I didn't know. And so, you know, because, you know, you will see like, oh, you know, we knew about 9/11 before it happened. But, yeah, well, it's in a stack of like, you know, 6,000 other bits of intelligence that come in. The person that reports it's the first time they've reported. Okay, and so you can't vouch for it. It's a piece of data, and so there's nothing else that makes it break squelch. And then, but in hindsight, you can say, oh, there it is. We had it. We screwed it up. Yeah. But so it's the reliability of the source, the frequency of reporting all go into making HUMINT very interesting, I think, in my opinion. So
absolutely.
So we can call you up and you can get out your secret decoder ring and help us on occasion then, yes?
Yes, absolutely. No.
I'm
not Hillary Clinton here.
Stuff that's in the news, though, you would be able to explain to us. But so where does this whole writing thing get in? And where does, for instance, one of the things that I said about you last hour was that you have not been afraid to wade in to a debate that most males in the Marine Corps don't want any part of. In fact, I would tell you this, they run from it, the debate that you wade into with frequency. Where does the riding come from? And the fearlessness of swimming upriver, you know, specifically against your gender, come from? How does that happen?
Well, one, maybe I should have taken a lesson from those dudes and ran the other way, because it's not always fun to be the person willing to say out loud what everybody else is thinking. Or go against what people are thinking.
Or both. So the males are running that way. The females are running towards you, and you say, "Yeah, I'm not going with them, and I'm not with them. Let me just stand against everybody." There you go.
Yeah, let me be the lone wolf out here. Let me just I'll be the bullet sponge for this entire conversation, and you know, have everybody from left, right, up, down, center, just shoot me.
It's awesome. I'll tell you what. If you Google Lauren's name. And tell everybody how you spell Serrano, because it's not...
S-E-R-R-A-N-O.
Okay, if you Google Lauren Serrano, you're going to see a whole variety of shit, okay?
And
you're going to see pictures of her on the same screen with Barack Obama. It's all... You'll be surprised. And tell me how this gets started, and I want to... You must have been... Were you like, oh my God, look what I've done after you start riding?
Well, kind of. It was kind of an accident. Like, so my first article that I wrote about, like, why women shouldn't be in combat, I thought it was kind of just obvious stuff. Like, none of the thoughts in there were necessarily original. There were just thoughts that a lot of my peers were too afraid to, like, write down on paper. And I, like, a couple weeks before I wrote that article, I was in Okinawa just sitting down with some of my peers and other Marines, and it had been a huge topic of conversation at that time, and we were all just kind of, you know, shooting the shit, talking about it, what our thoughts were, and overwhelmingly people were like, yeah, women in combat is just a bad idea. Like, why are we doing this? It doesn't support the mission. Like, I don't understand. Like, you know, none of us women want it. Like, none of the women I knew in my battalion wanted it. Like, what, like, where was this coming from? And there was kind of a collective feeling. I mean, you definitely had some outliers, I'm sure, that maybe didn't feel comfortable voicing their opinion when, you know, most of us are talking about how it's a bad idea. I don't know, but I mean, we're sitting there talking about it, and it didn't feel like my opinion was, you know, an outlier or anything that controversial. And so I actually wrote that article during my PCS from Okinawa to Virginia Beach, because that's a really long flight. and so I just sat there writing down everything that I had talked about with my peers previously. And it is kind of an emotional topic, because the emotional part of me absolutely wants women to be in combat, wants women to be in every MOS, you know, to be interchangeable with WEN. I definitely come from a background being told that I can do whatever I want and I shouldn't have any, you know, stupid barriers in my way. And I mean, I wrestled on my high school wrestling team just because somebody told me women couldn't wrestle. And I was like, F you, I'm going to prove you wrong. And I went and signed up for the male wrestling team and got my ass kicked, but I did it for, you know, a couple of years. And, just to prove everybody wrong, to prove that women could do it. That's the kind of person I was. And I was like, I do understand that proving women, you know, women's abilities is important, but the battlefield when lives are at stake is just not the place to do it. You know, at your high school wrestling gym, that's where you do it. That's where you, you know, start the societal change of, you know, supporting women, not on the combat field.
Why?
But anyway, so...
What's the difference? Why?
Lives are at stake. People die in combat, and I just don't think the gravity of that is, like, fully understood in these conversations sometimes, that people will die. And my husband is one of them that's out there on the front lines a lot with, you know, infantry units and forward deployed with some SOC units and stuff. And I want to make sure he comes home alive. And I would never forgive the policymakers if my husband died on the battlefield or bled out because the woman next to him, who was there for a political statement, couldn't carry his body out of harm's way. So, it's so emotional. It very much is, because it's heartbreaking to say that women and men aren't, you know, completely interchangeable and the same. I want them to be. But,
well, no,
it's not reality.
Right, it's not the world the way you want it to be. It's the same. Let me ask you a question about the whole transgender thing. There are parallel, you know, things. And so here's McNamara's position. First of all, we put people out of the United States military for all kinds of things that put them on the shelf physically for years. The juice isn't worth the squeeze for the military. You need to be an interchangeable widget for us, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so when you become non-interchangeable, when we have to put you aside for 5, 6, 7, 8 years, okay, you have ceased to be an asset to us. You are now a liability, and we get rid of you. And I'm not even talking about transgender. I'm talking about amputees. I'm talking about other physical injuries. We med board you, and we put you out of the military. Okay, so to me, we should screen for whether you know what gender you are or not. Do you contemplate on changing your gender during your period of enlistment? Yes. Okay, you're disqualified. You can't come and do this. We can't use you. Okay. Now the question becomes: if you're a full up round post op transgender person, and you can enlist in the American military, I think, till you're 39, maybe 42 if you're a doctor or shit like that. So let's just say I'm post-op at 25. I live my life from 25 to 30. I don't suffer from depression or anything like that. At 30, I say I want to join the military. I walk in, and I say I want to join. Should that person be barred from joining the military if they can meet all the requirements? Since we don't exclude groups of people in the military, I don't know how you say no to that, as long as they can do that. Now, somebody said, well, what about, don't they have hormone replacement that they have to sustain, you know, through, and can you, the military support that? And I said, well, I don't know. Let me just say you can give them a jar of pills. If you could give them a jar of pills and they're worldwide deployable and they have no psychological issues and they've successfully completed that, then I don't know why you would bar them. I'm curious about your thoughts about the transgender thing.
You know, to be honest, I really don't know that much about the transgender issue per se. I don't know any transgenders in the military. Apparently there are about 15,000 of them or something. If I've met them, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. Like, I've definitely heard the conversation of, you know, well, what if they're in the infantry out in the front lines in the middle of nowhere and they need their pills and they can't get them because not getting resupply is a common thing when you're forward deployed. And the next thing you know, they're having all kinds of crazy hormonal issues and then they're a CASI back. And then, you know, what now? I've definitely heard that and, okay, got it. Just similar to, like, you know, when they become pregnant, you know, become an issue.
Well,
but I just honestly don't know enough about transgenders to know what makes sense or not. I absolutely think there's probably some MOSs and places that, regardless of your gender, you know, transgender issues or whatever, you can absolutely make work. I mean, like, there's a lot of positions that don't really deploy forward to the fields that I'm sure you can get the resupply of whatever pills you need. Commonly, and I don't think it would be an issue for somebody that doesn't have all sorts of, you know, psychological issues or needs, you know, surgeries on the reg, but I don't know. I'm not transgender. I don't know many of them. I would hate to disclude somebody that wants to serve our country in a capacity in which they can do it.
All right. No. I'll accept that. And then validate one more thing or take issue with it, if you will. Pregnancy is not easy on the Marine Corps, right? I come back from a 6-month deployment in Africa driving trucks. I get back. We're going to 29 Palms to support. I don't have to go because I just got back. And then somebody gets pregnant and they come to me, and I've got a wife and I've got 2 kids, and they come to me and they say, Mac, you're going to 29 Palm. And I say, I just got back. I've been gone for 6 months and the work, you know, she's pregnant. She can't go. We're trying to get somebody else, but so far nobody else has anybody to give up. So you're going. I mean, that's tough enough. And there's, you know, it's just, and that's day to day life in the Marine Corps.
Mm-hmm.
That's day to day.
Absolutely.
That's day to day life.
I mean, there's a small portion of me that just thinks, you know, women shouldn't be in the military at all. You know, there's too many issues, too many, too much friction. You know, it would just be easier on everybody if there's just no women around. But I also recognize that women bring a lot of strength to the service. And there are some MOSs that would be incredibly weakened by losing women, you know, foreign area officers, intel, civil affairs, some of those like heavily rely on women
right.
and what they can bring to the fight. So the military would be weaker without women. So we need to find a way to balance it. But, you know, yes, having women and having pregnant women is a very, very traumatizing time for the unit that the woman's in, the woman herself, her husband, and the Marine Corps in general, and it's not easy. And that's why most people get out when they get pregnant.
You know, again, that's sad. And so I want to get to the article you wrote, but I want to finish up with your first one. Then we'll take a break. You write your article, and what is it? Why Women Don't Belong in Combat? What's the title of it?
Something like that. Yeah.
All right.
Yes.
All right.
Why women don't belong in the Marine Corps infantry? Something like that.
Okay. All right. So, and then what happens? That thing explodes in the Marine Corps.
Right. Okay. I was kind of in shock. So, like, wrote that thing on the airplane on the big Patriot Express across the Pacific, you know, shot it off to the Gazette because I had just seen, like, one of their ads for, like, the Chase Prize. Like, be bold, be challenging, challenge, like, policymakers and, you know, conventional wisdom or something like that. And I was like,
that's
yeah,
me.
Like policymakers are all right.
It's
got
my name all over it.
I was like, I don't know. I mean, whatever. Just, you know, throw my name in the hat, kind of fire, forget, throw it in, and forget about it. And then a couple months later, I get an email from the Gazette saying you won this essay contest. And I was like, what? Really? Like, I didn't think I had anything in there that, you know, a million other people hadn't already thought about. But I guess I'm just one person willing to be the sacrificial lamb to, you know, say it out loud. And so my immediate gut reaction was to just retract the article altogether. I was like, oh, that was a mistake. You know, let me retract this writing. I do not want to be in direct line of fire from all these, you know, social, what do they call them? The social revolutionists or whatever. I just don't want to deal with this issue in public, but it was kind of too late at that point. Like, and I had talked to my husband about it. I was like, hey, honey, like, oh, I won this thing. What should I do? Like, probably going to get a little bit of flack for it. Like, what do you think? And so he really sat down with me and was like, hey, one, you have a lot of backing from folks within the Marine Corps. You know, I let a lot of people read that thing, before I submitted it, and before it got published, like, dozens and dozens of Marines give me feedback and let me know that, like, they support me, that I'm not just this, like, lone wolf. And my husband was like, hey, like, nobody ever made history or nobody ever made a difference without making waves. And was like, yeah, you're probably going to get a lot of hate and discontent thrown your way. You're probably going to make some enemies. He's like, but that's okay. You don't need to be everybody's best friend. You don't need to necessarily make everybody happy. It's impossible to make everybody happy. No matter what you do, people are going to be upset. Damned if you do, damned if you don't. Like, you know, at least people can at least respect the fact that you had the courage to speak up and, like, say, you know, what you're thinking out loud, even if they don't agree with it. And he was like, you know, do it, publish it, you know, all, see what happens and go from there. And so really based off that conversation with my husband and knowing he wasn't going to leave me if, you know, I had, you know, people, bad snipers following me around, then, you know, it'd be fun. So I went along with it
and that's great advice, but you're not talking about like, if so, a lot of like, for instance, I mean, I've written for the Gazette and you get the occasional person who takes issue with what you wrote and then writes an email and, you know, a letter and rips you apart. That's not what happened.
Yeah.
That's not your experience.
No, and that's kind of what I was expecting. I was like, okay, I'm probably going to piss off some people and get a little bit of flack. But, like, I was shocked right after my article was published. So, like, one of my dude friends, like, called me and was like, dude, you're trending on Facebook. And I was like, what? Like, how on earth did this small little Gazette article, like, blow up? Like, what is happening? And then, like,
okay, hold on. Trending on Facebook, okay? You know,
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Right. In order for you to trend on Facebook, that's gigantor, right? That's like, okay, so Facebook is tracking worldwide things that people are talking
like,
about. Exactly.
I was like, what the hell? Like, who did it? How did this happen? Like,
it's
okay.
It's a mistake. Is it me?
I was like, what? Again, because, like, you know, Katie Petronio had, like, written an article a couple years before me, and, like, she got, you know, some traction and stuff, too, and, like, you know, I didn't think mine was anything as crazy as hers, like, anything more crazy. But, yeah, I was pretty shocked. And then, like, and then the emails started flooding in. I probably got 100-plus emails from various Marines around the Corps. And you know what? You know what's surprising?
What?
Every single one of the personal emails that I got was in total support. And was like, thank you so much for, you know, actually saying what we're feeling and, like, speaking up on behalf of the, you know, Marines and, you know, not taking this political correctness bullshit, you know, seriously. And it was from a range of Marines, anywhere from, like, Lance Corporal so-and-so all the way up to, I had, you know, 3 star generals emailing me. Asked me not to disclose names, but I had a good almost a dozen flag officers email me and be like, hey, like, thank you for, you know, bringing this to the table, like, you know, mad respect sort of thing. I had, like, people coming out of woodworks all over the place. They asked me not to share their names and who they are, but I had a lot of people emailing me and, you know, kind of thanking me. But it was all of the public sort of, like, super feminist groups and stuff that were, you know, shredding me apart, you know, in public settings so that it could be chimed in for or chimed in on my, you know, other, you know, feminist groups or, you know, whoever wants to support the issue. So I thought that was interesting that a lot of praise in private and reprimand in public, per se. Does that make sense? But,
let me tell you, it does on this issue. And just like the people that are support you, praise in private and pretty much be absent publicly because they can't get near the issue. Which is another part of this issue. Hey, you know, we really can't, you know, we can't get this issue, get after this issue, or we can't speak to it because, you know, we're men and we'll be painted and our careers will be essentially ruined. And so
that's a lot of what these men were telling me in their emails. They were just like pouring out their hearts to me on how they wish that they could speak up. They can't. So they wanted to, like, essentially speak through me or how I, you know, spoke for that group that's been silenced in these debates, because anytime a, you know, white male opens their mouth to talk about this issue, immediately they've got a big target on their back for being, you know, biased or discriminatory or, you know, racist or bigotist or whatever, you know, name your
all the above.
Yeah, it's thing. And so they were just like, hey, you know, it's cool. It's refreshing to see somebody, you know, talk about this issue.
Well, essentially, can we have an honest, frank debate about an issue like this? And I'll tell you what, and it's gotten worse since the whole Marine United thing happened, because now it's like, we got it. You Marines hate women. I haven't talked to one woman who wants integrated boot camp or recruit training in phase one, right? Am I wrong? Do you know women who would?
I've talked to one. I have a couple people that I'm sure would support it,
okay.
But only because I know a few, like, very, like, hardcore feminists that, you know, think integration should be. You start from day one, but for the vast majority of other people I've talked to, said it's a terrible idea. What are we trying to do? Get rid of women in the Marine Corps? So there's kind of like an adverse effect that's happening with some of these policies in which women are being driven out of the Marine Corps because the Marine Corps is becoming less and less of a place that actually values the genders for who they are and what they bring to the fight and what a woman is and can do and can be, and you know, having unrealistic expectations of women or just not understanding the society in which women come from. So you've got a, you know, cross-section of society of young people going to boot camp, and gender roles are still extremely prevalent in American society. And so to start integration from day one before they've even had, you know, the speech about Marine Corps values and valuing people for who they are, you know, regardless of skin color, race, identity, gender, and all that other stuff, before they've even had that speech to integrate them, I think, you know, can be very shocking to a lot of the people that we recruit. So.
My guest on a Wednesday morning is Captain Lauren Serrano. She's an intel officer. She got a bit of Magellan in her, unafraid, she's not afraid to wade into controversies and in particular gender controversies about the Marine Corps. And her last little comment is kind of a segue. We're going to take a quick break. Lauren, you hang with us, right?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. So, and then we're going to come back and talk about her latest article that appeared in last month's Gazette, and the title is "To Get Out or Not to Get Out?" Gender crisis in the Marine Corps. So we've kind of laid the foundation to have a discussion about that. But it is kind of interesting to Google your name and see a final question before we go to the break. So after you write the initial article, Why Women Don't Belong in Marine Infantry, given everything that happened, did you want to write again? Because a lot of times, you know, when you put your hand up and they say, okay, Lieutenant, give your answer, the takeaway from that is, I'm never doing that again. Man, I just...
Yeah, absolutely.
So what was your takeaway from your experience that trended on Facebook, that trended nationally, and that created a firestorm, really, relative to this issue of how do we do this gender thing? Because it's not settled, and we're afraid to talk about it, yet it's a pretty important issue. What was your takeaway? Mm-hmm. Was it... Yeah, I've just started on this. They'll hear from me again. Or, yeah, Serrano, maybe next time you might want to rethink that. What was your takeaway?
I mean, initially, those first couple weeks after I read that article, I just wanted to hide under my bed and never come out, you know, because it was like, oh, God, I don't want to pick up the news today. Like, initially, I was like, I'm never doing that again. You know, it was a bad idea. But then... as time kind of went on, I had so many amazing Marines reach out to me and kind of bring me into their fold and let me know just how important it is to talk about these things and to have constructive criticism and, you know, debates about these topics from the people that the policies are going to impact and how I shouldn't stop. And one of them was my boss, General Groen at the time, the Durant. He was like, Lauren, do not stop writing. You know, this is important stuff. You know, you need to get out there. And then
for those of you who don't know, Mike Groen is like the prince of intelligence. He's one of the nicest guys. He's a smart guy. He's got incredible experience. He was General Mattis's intel guy on the march up and also in Iraq in 2004. But he's a great, great, great guy. And so so you got encouragement from the right people, yes?
I got encouragement from him, and then Mary Reinwald, too, who's absolutely amazing. She's a Leather Gazette, editor of the Leatherneck. And she too, is an amazing woman, and she reached out to me. We had lunch multiple times, and she's a true icon to me, who made the rank of colonel, had four kids, you know, still married to her husband, and, you know, really the epitome of the kind of Marine I want to be. And she reached out to me and was like, hey, like, I support you, like, other women who support you, like, in the Marine Corps. And then, you know, she's really been a stable person for me to encourage me to keep writing and keep thinking and keep publishing things that are controversial. And same with Colonel Emily Swain. She also reached out to me. We had lunch a few times. She brought me into the fold of kind of women's issues and groups, and had lunch with her and other female Marines multiple times who all were like, hey, you know, I get it. You're getting a lot of flack for speaking out, but please stop. Please don't stop doing it because it's important to us that you do so. And so every time I've written, it's been incredibly, you know.
So now you're screwed. You got to keep
doing it. I am. I'm kind of screwed because people know. I know. I totally backed myself in a corner. It's kind of accident, but like, yeah. But also, it's also kind of cool because, like, never did I think I was going to meet President Obama, you know. Never did I think I was going to have Fox News and CNN and all these other places asking me for interviews and have to turn them down. You know, that's the cool. I was like, that's pretty cool.
Tell us about me. You know. Tell the story about meeting President Obama.
So I'd already received a whole lot of interview requests from random news agencies, and the Pentagon PAO was always very hesitant on me doing anything. So I said no to a lot of the interview requests.
Not sure why.
From the news stations. I don't think they trust me.
No, let me tell you. You were not the story that they wanted to put out there. That's not the story.
Yeah, but I was trying to be conscious of that. I don't want to screw over the Marine Corps because I love the Marine Corps. I don't want to, you know, create an issue. But at the same time, the policymakers really need to know.
Come on. It is an issue. Right. It's a 9,000-pound gorilla in the room that's over there with asthma.
Right.
That's over there with asthma breathing like this. And we're all acting like nothing to see here, boys. Smiling,
right.
Smile and wave. Nothing to see
smile
here.
Smile and wave. Smile and wave. So I actually, I'm pretty sure I'm unwelcome at the PAO's office, the Pentagon. So when CNN put together the presidential town hall, they reached out to me about 6 weeks before it happened to kind of explain to me what the town hall was going to be and how they picked a variety of topics that they wanted President Obama to talk about, and one of them was women in combat, and they really wanted me to be the person to ask the question. Initially, I, you know, kind of was like, oh, I would love to, but I can't, you know, I keep getting told no by the PAO, the Pentagon, I hate this guy, you know, but so I asked my boss,
can you imagine what he was saying about you, like under his breath? I want to kill her. If she ever utters another word in public, I'm gonna run over her with my car.
If he's ever my IRS or RO, I'm totally screwed. I don't care.
I'm gonna slam it in reverse and back over her. If I see Serrano in the subject line of an email, my head explodes.
It's true. I'm pretty sure. I think. Yeah.
I'm sure
I'm in their top three of people that know.
Now you're back on their radar again. Public enemy number one, PAO's hit list. All right, so it is true.
So I initially don't even go to the PAO. I ask my boss, General Seeley, and I was like, "Sir, like, I got this interview or not interview this town hall thing is going on. President Obama this time, he's talking about military issues in a military setting. It's on a military base. It's sponsored by the military. It's not like I'm just going on Fox News as like this rogue captain, like, you know, speaking out. It's like actually a military forum. It's supposed to be like a military discussion, and it's going to be scripted, like, you know, can I do this? I want to do this." And so General Hussey, who's amazing, love him as a boss, he, dragged me over to the PAO's office at the Pentagon, and I was like, oh, okay, I have to talk to this guy at the Pentagon. Chatting with them, and initially they say yes. They say it's a good idea, you know, because it is a military forum, it's a, you know, military issue. If I don't talk about it, they're just going to get somebody else to ask the question, and, you know, might as well be a Marine and, you know, be somebody who can represent the Corps. So initially the PAO at the Pentagon says yes, but wants me to send him my list of potential questions ahead of time.
Yeah, those communists.
So he can screen them.
Exactly.
Yeah, so because CNN had asked me for, like, a list of 3 to 5 questions to go through, and then they were going to help me pick, like, the best one, you know, quote, the best one.
Right.
So I send my list of questions over to the PAO, but I also send my list of questions over to a mentor of mine. I don't know if I should say the name.
No, go ahead.
But a very senior person. Okay. I sent him over to a very senior person as well. And I was just like, hey, sir, like, this is happening. Like, these are my questions. Like, what I would like to get some feedback from sort of the higher level brass on whether I should do this. What do you think?
Now, let me just tell you, all of this is because Lauren is taking on the popular notion that there is no gender difference. Okay? What?
Mm-hmm.
Matt, hold on. Did I just hear that right? Yes. So Lauren's speaking out against this popular notion that gender's irrelevant in combat. That relative strength matters when you fight the North Koreans as an infantryman, not absolute strength. Okay? So she's taking this notion on, right? And she's taking on the DOD tsunami, the political tsunami, like all comers, right, in this cage match. And she's like standing there alone. To include the PAO jackasses that want to, you know, crap what you say and blah, 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 blah. This is a great story. It almost feels like this is like a fictional novel. Except it's not. So, what is your mentor? Your secret mentor says this is good.
So my secret mentor, who is amazing, called me. Like, I was shocked that he just picked up the phone and called me like 20 minutes after I emailed him. And I'm standing on a street corner. I just gotten off the metro in D.C. and I'm standing on the street corner sitting there, and I was almost shocked as to who I was talking on the phone with, that this is important. This topic was so important to him that he called me 20 minutes later because he's the most busy person, you know, around.
Right.
And I sat there on the phone with him in this random street corner in D.C., and we chatted for about an hour about this topic, and he was like, this is incredibly important that you do it, like that you do, you know, represent the population that can't ask this question, and that we do it right. And that he was like, Lauren, you need to stand tall, look the president in the eye, you know, have no fear, and do it, regardless of what anybody else tells you. He was like, screw that guy at the PAO's office. He was like, that guy is a coward, or the PAO in general is a coward if they don't recognize that this is a conversation that needs to be had. They can't just only talk about the party line. And he really gave me encouragement to speak out or to continue doing this. And so, like, a day later, the PAO calls me and was like, hey, Lauren, we really want you to participate in the town hall, but we don't want you to talk about women in combat. Here are the three topics we approve you to talk about. One of them is, like, pivot to Asia. One of them about, like, aviation readiness or something I don't even know about. Like, it was just, like, a total cop-out. And I was just like,
that is,
okay.
Let me tell you, that is the business of the DOD PAO. They are professional cop-outs. They do not, and I know from trying to get them to come on and talk about issues, you can't get anybody on active duty to come on and talk about anything. What you need is people that are retired that say, oh, yeah, I'll talk about it. And then they let it rip. But people on active duty, you know, they could have like a mouthful of shit, right? And it could be leaking out of their mouth. And you walk up to me like, do you have shit leaking out of your mouth? And they'll say, mm-mm. Like, are you sure? Are you sure? Because it really looked, and they look at you like, mm-mm. And then you look at the PAO. Like, does that guy have shit leaking out? And the PAO is like, absolutely not. Why would you ever think that? Here, look over here. We just painted this truck. Like, oh, okay. That's the PA. That's what PAOs do, and that's how the media works, and that's why Lauren is so interesting, because it's like this David and Goliath thing, all right? It's like the sentiment that is most prevalent in the Marine Corps, but everybody's afraid to talk about it. And so here you have what's a female form of David? Is there a female form of David?
No.
I don't, so we have the female David out there with her slingshot twirling it around, and you have all comers. You have all comers just like arrayed around David, Right? Oh, and here she's standing there with her slingshot.
Oh, God.
So
all
now,
I keep thinking about this. What a moron I am. Why did I do this?
No, this is awesome. So you of course, you have to blow the PAO off, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wrote him a very respectful. And he was a major, so it wasn't like the PAO.
So.
It was his representative. So, I emailed this major a couple days later and was like, sir.
Backbone of the military, majors.
They are important people.
Not really.
And the poor major, I'm sure he had his own personal beliefs, but he was just doing what he was supposed to be doing. He's doing his job.
Right.
So, I emailed him and was like, sir, I'm going to respectfully not, maybe not respectfully, but, I'm not doing this to disrespect you or the organization, but I'm not going to ask a question about the pivot to Asia. They asked me to ask a question about women in combat. President Obama knows that this is going to be a question asked of him. He doesn't know the specific question, but he knows it's a topic coming. And I'm like, the president is asking for honest feedback from the American citizens that are impacted by the decisions he makes. And if I don't, ask an honest question about a topic that he really needs to know about, then I'm doing a disjustice to me, the core and, everything I stand for. I cannot stand up there like a big weenie and ask a question about aviation readiness. No. And I was like, sir, if this gets me counseled, if I get NJP'd for this, I accept responsibility.
What?
And I was like, but I'm not going to be, I want to be promoted for, and be a part of the core for, actually having guts and, doing what I think is right.
Okay, so Lauren, look.
A coward.
So he gets off the phone, and he goes to his boss, a lieutenant colonel, and says, sir, she wants to tell the truth and ask an honest, straight-up question. What?
I didn't hear from them again.
Oh, you think?
Yeah. He just kind of running back. I was like, okay. Go do it. And,
tell me she's not going to tell the truth and ask a straight-up legit question. Tell me she's not going to do that. Sir, I think she is. Jesus Christ. How do we get ourselves into this situation? Most importantly, how do we get out of it? We have to paint her as Rogue. All right. Do you have a Facebook account? You could just imagine the PAO.
Oh, buddy. Oh, yeah. It was bad.
So now, so the day comes.
I'm still kind of waiting for my counseling, but
screw it.
It was kind of cool. CNN sent a private car to pick me up.
Of course.
That morning. And,
are you kidding me? It was great.
Cool black man.
It was great. It was going to be great theater. There was no way they were letting you say, I've been lost in traffic in D.C. They're like, no, we need this. This girl's got to be here because this is going to be one of the high points of drama in this thing. Make sure we get the car with the smart driver, not that dumb guy who drove last time. Okay, got it. So you show up.
Yeah, it was. It was pretty cool. I show up. I bring my husband. I was like, he's coming with me. And, it was awesome. And I went down and, me and some of the other folks that all got to ask questions, all got to meet ahead of time. And some of them were Medal of Honor recipients and other people have sort of made waves. The girl in the Coast Guard who was one of the biggest proponents of that show Invisible War about sexual assault in the military, she was there, and so all of us who are sort of black sheep, I guess, or Medal of Honor recipients, it's kind of awkward that we're both in the same room together, but we chatted ahead of time, and it was a really interesting, great experience. And
but then, wait, hold on. To be fair, the one thing that you all have in common is courage, whether it's physical courage on the battlefield, under incredible, in a situation where the odds are not really in your favor, or whether it be the moral courage to stand up and talk about sexual assault, or what you truly believe relative to gender in combat. I mean, that's what you guys all have in common. Yes.
Yes, sir.
Without a doubt, the courage to stand up and speak out when nobody else is speaking out. So you guys all meet, mm-hmm. and then when do you get to meet the president?
Just in that town hall, we were all on standby for him to show up and, he shows up and it's just like a scripted sort of event so they know which questions are going when. And so I asked my question and then during the question too, he didn't really even answer my question. fully. But when he did, he looked at me and he was like, look at you. You're a Marine officer. You're standing there. You know, you look like you're in great shape. Like, you can probably do more pull-ups than me. At that point, I was actually 4 months pregnant, and I really wanted to blurt out into my microphone, sir, I'm 4 months pregnant, and you think you're in, you know, I'm in better shape than you. But one, I didn't think it was appropriate, and two, I hadn't told our families yet that we were pregnant again, or that I was pregnant.
Yeah,
so,
that would have been awkward.
I didn't think it was appropriate, but part of me inside really wanted to blurt it out to him. But afterwards he came through and shook everybody's hands, and we chatted for a few minutes. I actually did challenge him to a pull-up contest outside, but he denied me.
Yeah, you know, he's a basketball player. He's not a pull-up person. Give me a 60-second answer. In all of it, what was the most, relative to the first article, what was the most unpleasant part of it?
Just seeing my name smeared for talking about this, or kind of having people take my words and twist them around, or just take bits and pieces of what I said in my article, and just highlight those particularly unflattering, you know, sentences, or, you know, twist it to meet whatever meaning that they're trying to make, and right. and really misunderstand what I'm trying to say. I'm not trying to say that women don't belong in the military, or that women don't have a role in combat, or that women shouldn't be in combat, period, that they shouldn't actually be in the infantry line units, and there's a difference between being in combat and being in the infantry line units, and not having people that don't understand the topic or understand the military not understanding where I'm coming from, or what the true core of the topic and discussion is about, and about infantry units. And, you know, if you don't know the structure of an infantry unit and the difference between a waterman and a 311 and lineman, and, you know, how the infantry line units work, then you don't really have a voice in this conversation, per se, until you educate yourself on, you know, what the difference between women in combat is and women in the infantry. And so that was kind of unpleasant, just to see people misrepresent what it is that I'm saying, or what it is that I stand for, or to think that I'm not being patriotic, because I did this because I am patriotic, not because I'm anti-patriotic.
Well,
I am a feminist at heart.
Let me just tell you, I mean, what I, you know, in reading what you wrote, I read it. And again, you have to understand the climate of that she writes this in, which is a climate in which women are going to be in the combat arms, right? It was the president's agenda, the DOD saluted on it, and you had, I would tell you, the vast majority of Marines in the combat arms MOSs go look and say, what? Why won't anybody stand up and tell the truth? Why won't the commandant put his hand up and say, we're against this? And to his credit, General Dunford commissioned the Ground Combat Integration Task Force, and then that thing got killed before it even arrived, right? When you had the Secretary of the Navy annihilate it and slander it, mm-hmm. which is what politicians do, right? If what's going to come out of a study is going to make you look bad, what do? You annihilate the study before it gets to market. That way they're like, oh yeah, that thing. But there was incredible frustration by all these people that Captain Serrano's talking about, that say, you speak for us, and yet alone and unafraid she steps in front of the tsunami. So no small amount of courage to write it, to defend it, and then on behalf of a lot of people, thanks for speaking the truth. But I will say this: I think more people ought to come out and speak the truth. If you can't be in an organization where you can stand up and tell the truth, it's not worth being in. I believe that in my heart of hearts. You know, you ought to be able to stand up, and we ought to be able to have a respectful, responsible dialogue, be it about transgender, be it about women in the infantry, be it about what we're going to talk about next after the break is are we creating a climate in this attempt to get women in the infantry and combat arms in which we make it so onerous for women who are mothers, who are Marine officers, who are Marine enlisted Marines, that I can't do it. I can't do all these things without being a second-class PFTer, which marginalizes my career. You've created this climate that I can't live in anymore, and so I'm going to get out because I can't do it, and I'm not going to be a half-assed Marine. So we're going to take a quick break. Our guest, the courageous Lauren Serrano from Marin County. who would have thought? Marin County, the ballsiest place in the country. More of all Marine Radio coming up next on the All Warrior Radio Network. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military? For a first responder? For a hunter? For an outdoorsman? Or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you, the Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum, it's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug, scope, laser, camera, light, put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOC community should be aware of.
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Nine twenty-one on a Wednesday. Mike McNamara with you, All Marine Radio, and privileged to be joined this morning by Captain Lawrence Serrano. Now, is Serrano your married name or maiden name? Wait, hold on. I forgot to turn the volume up. Is it your married name or maiden name?
It is. Serrano's my married name. My maiden name is Reisinger.
Reisinger. That's like German, right?
I am. I'm very German.
Serrano's way cooler. It's Italian. Italian's way cooler than the German.
Puerto Rican.
Is it? That's even better.
Yes.
Come on.
My husband is 100% Puerto Rican. See, I'm down with, you know, the minority.
There you go. I got a cooler name. Yeah, like what was it? Rice Mueller? What is it?
Reisinger.
Reisinger. I know. Are you related to anybody that lives in Sacramento?
No, I am not.
Oh, I went to high school with a couple of guys named Reisinger. And they were jackasses too. I was just wondering.
Yeah, definitely not my kin.
There you go. All right, let's talk about your article in the July edition of the Gazette. And and it's entitled, To Get Out or Not to Get Out, Gender Crisis in the Marine Corps. So give me the thesis of the article. Give me the major premises and the conclusion of the article.
So it's kind of twofold. One of the main theses is just that, you know, women need to be women and respected as women and need to be able to be a part of this Marine Corps as the women that they are and not as men. That women don't need to be a man in order to be accepted in the Marine Corps. So that's kind of one.
Okay.
And then two, the rest of the article kind of talks about what it's like to be a mother and a Marine, and it has some policy recommendations as to how the Marine Corps can better support women who want to be mothers and want to be women. Those are the two basic things it talks about, motherhood and just femininity in general.
Okay. All right, so I want you to overlay these issues kind of intersect, the first article and the second. So there's this, how would you describe it? There's this inclination in the Marine Corps to demand more physically of female Marines. Is that fair?
Yes, absolutely. The PFT has changed recently, and the uniform change in order for women to, like, actually look more like men by getting rid of women's uniforms or, you know, getting rid of anything that looks feminine in general. There's definitely a big push for masculinity in the Marine Corps, and it's done with good intention, but not necessarily good judgment. It's making it harder for women to stay in the Marine Corps who want to actually retain their femininity or retain their identity as a woman. And I think a lot of the changes, too, are being made with the intent of retaining more women and making the Marine Corps better place for women because it's trying to create an equal opportunity environment, but it's actually having adverse effects on at least a population of women in the Marine Corps who want to be women. They don't want to be men. They want to have women and not be judged for it. They want to wear a female uniform and be accepted for the uniform they're wearing. And there's a lot of, uncertainty as to why women get out of the Marine Corps. And there's definitely a voice saying that women get out of the Marine Corps because we're not treated as equals and because we don't have the ability to compete in the combat MOSs like men do. Therefore, we don't pick up rank like men do and we'll never be, you know, commanders and co-com commanders and general officers. Got it. But there's also a lot, I think there's a larger population of women that get out of the Marine Corps because they want to be a mom, because they, for family issues, for family reasons, because the Marine Corps is not a friendly place for mothers and for women who want to have a more traditional female role in their family. And I think a lot of that isn't realized by women themselves until they're actually faced with it later on in their Marine Corps careers. And I know that's what happened to me, that, you know, 5-8 years ago, if you would have talked to me about being a mom and an active duty Marine, like, I wouldn't bat an eye and just say, maybe one day, you know, and not even think about how incompatible the two of them are. Did I just go off on a tangent?
So where does this all, take us, Lauren, in terms of your opinion, in terms of where does this take us? So does this impetus towards, we want you to be more masculine, more fit, does it force women who are content with their role as Marines, without being in combat arms, is it pushing them in a direction that makes it more difficult to stay in the Marine Corps?
I think so. Time will tell once these policies have been implemented for a while and we can see the results. But I personally think that these policies are going to have adverse effects on those women who do want to maintain a family balance between the Marine Corps and, you know, their children and husbands. And the intent of a lot of these policies is really great to create equal opportunities and, you know, an equal working environment, but they're not actually accounting for the realistic concerns of most women and why they get out. So I have yet to meet a single woman who said she got out of the Marine Corps because she wasn't able to be an 0311. I mean, I read some articles about women that are concerned about that, but like nobody I've actually talked to, nobody I work with has that concern. On the contrary, most of the women I work with, their main concern once they, you know, are over those couple entry years is how do I stay in and be a mom? How do I stay in and be a wife? And now that the Marine Corps is pushing for higher physical standards, like, you know, less feminine uniforms, more demanding work environments from women, you know, raising that bar per se of what is, you know, appropriate or what the masses are generally capable of doing. A lot of women are just saying, hey, it was already hard. Marine Corps is making it harder. Screw this. I am out. And that's a conversation I have every day with my husband too. You know, it's in my turn. You know, I just had my second baby a couple months ago. This is my third day back from maternity leave. I'm starting a new job and I'm already stressed out. And,
yeah,
you know,
wait till the female ops over at MHG says, oh, Serrano, I've been waiting for you. Get your, it looks like you're 12 minutes past your last PFT deadline. I need you to come over here and run it now. I've got an email for you. Hey, Mac, I'm curious. First of all, before I ask my question, I just want to make a statement. I've been sitting here listening to Captain Serrano, and I just want to say how much I admire her courage to speak out and be an articulate voice of what a lot of Marines believe. it does make you think, if we can't even have an honest debate because we're afraid of the political repercussions of that debate, what a sorry state that we're in, and how in God's name do we ever do the right thing? Her simply recounting the episode with the Pentagon or DOD PAO, when she wants to ask an honest, straight-up question, is hilarious, except it's sad. My question is this. How much additional time does it take a woman to do 7 pull-ups? Is it hours every day in the gym? Is it hours every week in the gym? Is there a way that she can quantify that in terms of being able to continue to be a first-class PFTer? How do you quantify?
Good question.
First of all, I think that guy speaks for a lot of people who admire you for your courage in taking on the planet. I certainly do. Have you ever done 7 pull-ups?
My personal record is 12.
What's up, Stud Muffin? Let me tell you, I say that because there's guys who can't, and let me tell you, I'm not talking about kip pull-ups. I'm talking about dead hang pull-ups. Drop your ass out, lock your elbow out, and then pull your ass back up. That is not easy. There's a reason the Army doesn't do pull-ups, because they're hard.
They're very hard. So that's a very good question, and to the author of that question, thank you for listening, and thank you for the words of encouragement. Those are the reasons why I keep writing. And so to the question, I don't know the answer to that, because it's hard, because some women who, you know, grew up doing gymnastics, you know, may only take them a couple months to get up to whatever pull-up number they're trying to reach. Or they might already be there. I remember when I started ROTC, and one of the females that started the same year as me was a gymnast in her youth, and she could already do pull-ups at 18 when we started ROTC. And, like, she was such a badass, and everybody admired her for it, and she was automatically, like, the group favorite because she was a woman who could do pull-ups. But I found myself so incredibly jealous, just seething, that my parents hadn't put me in gymnastics when I was 4.
Exactly.
You know, if they had, I could have done pull-ups, but, you know, it's, you know, I can't go back to change that. I chose to play soccer, not, you know, gymnastics when I was a kid, and, you know, it had effects. But for me, a soccer player, somebody who never really did sports that involved upper body strength, I had a lot of trouble doing pull-ups. Like, and the only way I ever got to 12 was when I deployed to Iraq for a full year and did pull-ups every single day. So my command was really great in the fact that they actually put a pull-up bar in my office to help me do pull-ups, because when I got to Iraq, I couldn't do a single pull-up. And then when I was there, that's when all the discussion about making women do pull-ups was all in the news, and I was terrified, and I'm talking about how I'm probably getting kicked out because I can't do pull-ups, and oh my God, how hard it is. I'd try all those different pull-up routines that people keep sending me online.
Right.
So my boss was just like, the only way you're going to do pull-ups is by doing them. And, you know, you got to start somewhere. So he had, you know, the KBR guys make a pull-up bar and put it in my office. I worked in the command deck, and so he had it in the middle of the command deck, and I was the exec, so I sat out there in that deck with the pull-up bar in front of me. So every day when people came by, they would challenge me to do pull-ups, and they had a calendar on the wall, and they would count how my maximum amount of pull-ups for that day. And everybody knew I'm trying to do this. I'm also the only female Marine in my entire command, so everybody knows me and knows I'm stressed about this, and, you know, I'm the exec, so everybody's always coming by. So it was really just like it was an entire, like, unit effort to get me to do pull-ups. So in that year, I was able to go from 0 to 12, but it took me a year of doing pull-ups every single day, multiple times a day, and having everybody around me encourage me and, you know, having, literally having a physical calendar on the wall, like counting my pull-up number so that everybody can see if I'm slacking or not. And it was really hard. And, I mean, that's what it took to get me to do 12 pull-ups. And since then, I've had 2 kids and, you know, 15 pounds over what I want to be right now. I can't do a single pull-up right now. You know, my abs were ripped apart having children. My body's been destroyed, and I'm back down to 0 pull-ups, and I'm terrified. I haven't done a PFT in a couple years because I've been having kids constantly. And, you know, if it's going to take me to deploy to Iraq again for a full year and have people come by my office desk every day and challenge me to do pull-ups to get me back up to 12, like, you know, fuck.
No.
All right.
Exactly. Exactly. And then, so again, so what you're, I guess the point I'd like to make is that you're not talking, you're talking about an extraordinary effort. For instance, if you, you know, for instance, if you told guys that they had to go, yeah, instead of 20 pull-ups, because most guys, if you go and go for a 3-mile run and you do pull-ups every day, or I'd say 4 times a week, you can stay, you can max a PFT if you, in your younger years. It's not, it's not something that you need to do a lot, and that's an hour of work a day. Okay, so but if they took our PFT and said, you know what, in order to max it, you got to do 40 pull-ups, okay, and you got to cut your run down to 16 minutes. Guys would go, whoa, and I think almost that's kind of what we've done with women, to say, okay, now we want you over here. And the kind of physical effort that it's going to require, and I don't know that, as you said, I don't know that we've thought it through as well as maybe we should. I want to walk through, and I want you to give me a minute or two expand on the on some of these points that you've made relative to suggestions about how to retain and promote female service members. These are your policy recommendations. Encourage gender equity, not neutrality. Gender neutrality is currently defined privileges, non-female and predominantly male traits and standards, ultimately marginalizing women. Explain that.
Mm-hmm. So obviously we know there are biological and physical atomic like differences between men and women, and like not accounting for those is very much hurting women, because they're very different abilities and strengths. I'm not saying one is better or worse. They're just very different. And so recognizing that women and men do have these different strengths and bring different strengths and weaknesses to the core is incredibly important. It hones in on specific talents and, you know, really allows female service members to be respected and to be treated as team players without needing to act like men or conform to male standards. And we're ignoring reality by pretending that men and women are equal. So a lot of these standards too, I think, are reflecting the ability of, I call them the outliers, the women who are able to do a lot of pull-ups, who are able to run at the same rate as men. And those women are few and far between, although there are becoming more and more of them, which is great. But I still don't think the policies are necessarily reflecting the ability of the masses. They're still reflecting the ability of the outlying females. And right. So, for instance, over the last few years, we've really put some women on pedestals who are able to do 20 pull-ups, who are able to run 3 miles in 16 minutes. And that is great. And we will always have women able to do those kind of things, and I think we should highlight those women, because it definitely shows women that they can do it, but not your average woman is going to do that. So by holding average women to extraordinary standards, you're then pushing women out. And so that's where, like, you know, encouraging gender equality is important. So there's a reason why women have an extra 3 minutes on the PFT. For, like, if you look at world record standards for running, generally, for every extra mile, women run about 1 minute slower. So it makes sense for women to have an extra 3 minutes for a 3 mile run, you know, upper body strength. You know, I don't even want to touch that one with a 10 foot pole because everybody has their different ideas of women's upper body strength. But I mean, it's idiotic to think that women and men have the same upper body strength. And the capabilities are the same. So I think there needs to be more of a push towards accepting women for who they are and what they bring to the fight and for women's bodies and their abilities.
Because, if I were to tell you, I would say the Marine Corps would say, yeah, we accept women, but we want you to be like this. We want you to be like her.
Yeah, what kind of women are they accepting?
Well,
they're only accepting those outliers?
Yeah, exactly. We want you to be the outlier.
They want every woman to be an outlier, which means that you're just going to chop off, you know, the bottom 3/4 of women in the Marine Corps because we're not those outliers. And you're changing the standard from being standard that reflects the ability of the masses to a standard that reflects the ability of the outliers.
Right.
And so that's where somebody like me, who's very much I would consider very average PFTer, like, you know, I generally a first class,
But you had to work at it, right?
I had to work at it, but, you know, I generally run between, you know, 22 and 24, 25 minutes or so, which, you know, always landed me a good score, you know, 100 steps and, you know, my 70-second flex arm hang, and, you know, I was always up there, you know, 280, 285 and above, which was always pretty great, and I worked at it about the same level as men, and, you know, I went to the gym about the same amount of time as men did, and I was, you know, my score sort of reflected. And now that that's no longer okay, I'm terrified. Like, I'm terrified that what I was doing before I even got pregnant and had kids and, you know, my body went to shit and got old, I'm terrified that what I was doing before that landed me a first-class PFT is now going to land me a second-class PFT. Oh, by the way, it's so much harder with the extra baby weight that I'm still trying to lose and the kids at home that don't allow me to PT in the evening.
Officers don't do second-class PFTs.
No, we don't. So I'm like, okay, well, you know what? Maybe the Marine Corps is just not the best place for me anymore. Maybe it's not the best place for mothers anymore. Like, you know, I'm still feeling it out. Like, I haven't made a final decision yet, but I also haven't taken a PFT post 2 kids yet. So I'm
good luck on that deal. I've seen 4 kids get born. Yeah, I'd watch that. I'm like, whoa, you know, I'm childbirth day is like guy appreciation day. Yeah. That looks like, you know, and I think the whole mom kid relationship and closeness is really cool, but wow, this is like being in a National Geographic Wild Kingdom episode. This is crazy. On a serious note, this has been shoved onto the United States military, the women in combat, women in infantry. The Marine Corps' response is, we are now changing. For the first time, we're actually recruiting women. And if you look at our commercials, they betray what we're trying to recruit. We now are not looking for, you know, women that are looking to join the Marine Corps. We're looking for lacrosse players, wrestlers. Mm-hmm. We are looking for rugby players. We are looking for a very small segment of the female population because of the standard that we're being pushed towards as an organization. Does that make sense? And so, okay, if you're gonna push us there, okay, then we are going to now become the number one sponsor of USA Wrestling. We're gonna become the number one sponsor of, and you can go check it out who the big sponsors are now, of USA Women's Lacrosse. Okay? Because we need to be there because that's where the women that we want to come in the Marine Corps now. That's what they are.
Yes and no. Kind of. Yes and no. I think what people aren't realizing is that women's priorities in life changes over time. So I am that epitome of what the Marine Corps was recruiting. I wrestled in high school. I played varsity soccer all 4 years, was team captain the last 2 years, you know, class president. I was like,
Did you intervene in the hallway when somebody was getting picked on?
Because
that's what the,
I was friends with everybody sort of thing.
That's how the commercial goes.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Essentially, I look back and I think of who I was in high school and in my younger years, and I didn't play with Barbies. I played sports. You know, I was that sporty young kid. But it's interesting that.
Are we Barbie haters?
Now? Are we Barbie haters?
Yeah, we're Barbie haters now.
Oh, Barbie haters. I mean, essentially, after that comment, my God. I get the feeling that the Marine Corps is pushing us towards being Barbie haters, but I feel like there's this misperception that if we recruit only women lacrosse players and women wrestlers and like women who want to be MMA, then we're going to retain and promote women throughout their careers. And I think that the Marine Corps is mistaken because, like, I know I was that woman, you know, 15 years ago when I graduated high school and I, you know, wanted to be a Marine. I, you know, thought I was that badass woman that could climb the rope and do that. And here I am 15 years later, and my priorities have incredibly changed. Like, once you get married, have a kid, sort of like, you know, get into your 30s, and you realize, like, what you want out of life and what's important, and you realize that having kids is now more important than holding a lacrosse stick, like, the Marine Corps is going to have trouble even retaining those women that they're trying to recruit now.
Okay. All right, let me get to bullet number two. Female or male Marines should be given the option of taking 2 years of unpaid sabbatical with each child. Explain that one.
So I wish, of all of the other priorities I put in there, all the other policy recommendations, I wish this is the one that was on the table, I know, for me right now. Because I think this would benefit the Marine Corps and women. Because having women go back to work after, you know, 12 weeks of maternity leave is very hard. 12 weeks, I'm so thankful we're up to 12 weeks, you know, not that long ago we were only at 6, but, you know, it does a disjustice to the core and the woman by putting her into this work environment too early, where she has trouble going to the field, has trouble even working the standard amount of hours at work. Because she's got a child at home and she has to pump and if she wants to and, you know, getting back in shape and the unit is constantly picking up the slack for those women who have just had kids. And it's not fair to the Marine Corps or to the women to put those kind of responsibilities on the women too early. Before they're ready, before the woman's done, you know, weaning the child, and before the kid can hold up their head, and before they're sleeping more than 3 hours a night, you know, and are already exhausted. Like, you know, the Marine Corps requires a lot from its Marines, as it should. And it's a very demanding work environment, as it should be. And it's just, it puts women in an impossible position when they have to choose between pumping for their child or going to the staff meeting or, you know, showing up at 05 PT or having to skip it because your body is still healing because you had a stage 4 tear during your pregnancy.
Or your daycare doesn't open till 6:30.
Or the daycare doesn't open.
Right.
And so giving women, like, just a buffer of time. Or men, a buffer of time. Men can do it too, because, you know, I'm not trying to say that having kids is only a responsibility of the women, but men should take more responsibility at home. But we don't.
I mean, the assumption is that the onus will fall on you. How the hell do you even function at work, right, when you're up in the middle of the night a couple times every night?
Yes, that's exactly how I know I'm feeling right now, and it's like, Marine Corps is so demanding, and it's important that we give it the time and effort that it requires because it's a combat job. It's the mission of the Marine Corps, you know, the 91 Force of America. Like, it's I think all Marines, you know, have a duty to put in the work, to put in the time to be a good Marine and to do their job and do it well. But when faced with balancing new motherhood and doing your job well, like, something's got to give. And it takes parents a while to get their feedback under them after they're having kids. And I think maybe having a two-year buffer, like, I've heard rumors of a sabbatical, you know, coming around or, you know, being possible, but I've never actually seen anybody take it. I don't know how it works. I tried to look into it a few months ago, and there wasn't anything available. But having women, allowing women to just go and be mothers, take the time they need, you know, finish nursing, you know, put the kid into, like, a proper, you know, routine and daycare where they're sleeping through the night, and then they're going to a comfortable place during the day, and getting both the child and the parent to a place where they can operate independently and safely go on doing their work duties and going off to daycare, kind of doing what they should be doing at that time, is very important. And it's just, I feel like the units themselves would benefit so much more if women sort of bowed out for a couple years, if they knew it would be best for their families. I know I feel that way, because the pressure to go back to work after having kids is absolutely enormous. And not just going back to work, it's going back to work and then making up for the time that you left your unit gapped while you were on maternity leave,
right,
while you were at your 1,000 doctor's appointments, while you were having your child. And so there's this, like, bias against women who get pregnant or women who've just had kids. Like, the unit, I feel like they can't help but sort of hate on the women a little bit, because
they're
taking so much time.
We don't hate
personal issues.
We don't hate on them because, you know, they're Marines. And I had never served in a mixed-gender unit till I was at 1MHG. I guess the basic school was mixed gender, but it was 99% guys. And so, you know, you rarely dealt with women. And so, MHG was the first unit that I served in, right at the end of my career, that I had, that was mixed gender. And it was, again, it was like me going to the zoo for the first time. Man. It was because it was so different. And you didn't hate on female Marines. But they had to go take their child to a baby, you know, a doctor's appointment. The guys never did that. You know, maybe some exceptional single fathers did that. But, you know, but by and large, you know, you don't deal with that. And then she was off, you know, going to her doctor's appointments. And so you would go look for somebody that you needed when you needed them. And you're like, damn, so she just had a baby and you know, the baby's had some, you know, issues and yada, yada, yada. And so she has to leave early.
Right.
And
unit absorbs those problems. Like, right. I think it's unfair to my coworkers that they have to pick up the slack in my absence. And then it's unfair on me as a new parent to feel so guilty that I'm causing more work for my co-op
and
coworkers.
Let me tell you what's not an exceptional scene in the Marine Corps, is a baby in a carrier at work next to a desk, right? And, you know, and Marines love it, right? There's a little baby there, kind of cute, sleeping, mm-hmm. and whatnot. And a mom trying to get her work done. Had to go pick her up from the daycare because, right? And then, you know, for whatever reason, and then, you know, the baby, is it okay if I bring the baby to work? Yeah, you know, we don't care.
I've already done that.
Right. And so you as a leader, you're like, well, if she doesn't do this, then she can't finish her chop on this that we're trying to finalize. Absolutely. I'll feed, you need your baby fed, I'll feed your baby. But I need you to get this done tonight. You know, okay, sir, you know,
right.
Not a problem. And that's that sucks that you have
it's
to do
it
that.
It just sucks. It's unfair to women and the unit.
Right.
And so, like, not having that pressure to go back. And I remember my first baby, especially, I was getting emails throughout my maternity leave that I needed to respond to and, you know, trying to do some work from home, and I'm feeling so guilty, and they're asking me to come back early. Is there any way I can cut my maternity leave early to come back in?
Oh, really?
They're so short-manned and blah-de-blah, and I'm like, God, you know, yes, you don't want to say no because this is your job and you have a responsibility to your service and you are a patriotic person. You do want to do that and you understand the impetus that you're putting your coworkers in. And that sucks for both you and them.
And then here's doofus staring at you, right? And you're doofus's mom. That's
I know.
And that's his own sacred duty. And so,
yeah, and I mean,
that's brutal.
And I'm feeling it right now. I just finished my maternity leave 3 days ago.
All right.
And I have 68 days of leave saved. And it's use or lose it by the end of the fiscal year in a couple months. And I'm like, the mom in me wants to be like, screw it. I'm taking all 68 days right now. Like, sorry, unit, bye. But yet the Marine in me is like, no, I have a responsibility. I just checked into a new unit. I need to make a good impression. I need to do my job. I need to
and let me tell
in.
You,
if
Lauren,
I'm not here, who's
Lauren's
here?
Not, it's not like you're a non-performer either, right? I mean, you're...
I would like to think not. Like,
no, you're pretty... And you have a reputation for the work that you do. And so when you walk into work, you're going to deliver that. People know your reputation.
I don't want to be a shitbag.
Right.
And I don't think any Marine mother wants to be a shitbag. No, no Marine goes to work and says, hey, how can I skeet, you know, out of my job today? You know, like, I mean, they shouldn't, but at least that's not how I feel. And I just, I'm feeling incredibly torn right now, leaving my new baby at home with my toddler who's 1.5 and going into a new job and just knowing that the time suck that the Marine Corps you know, requires. And,
okay, let me ask, because you're painting a picture that I don't want to say it's uncomfortable for us, but, I think most people understand the dilemma. Let me ask you a couple more questions and then I'll let you go. And Lauren, I appreciate all your time this morning and I hope you'll come back and we'll do this again, whether we're talking about leadership issues or
if I don't get NJP'd or something between
now and then. Getting NJP'd for telling the truth. I'm not sure what article.
God.
Well, it would be Article 134, but it doesn't really matter. Because I wouldn't be the one being NJP, that's why it doesn't matter. The recommendation, dual active duty couples allow the husband and wife to share 12 weeks of maternity leave. At a minimum, mm-hmm. policy makers need to rethink paternity leave. Talk to us real quick about mm-hmm. that.
So paternity leave is 10 days right now, including weekends. Like,
huh?
Are you kidding? That's nothing. And sure, the father can't nurse the baby and, you know, can't share that newborn mom-child bond. Got it. But there's a lot of bonding that the kid can do with the dad, you know, skin-to-skin contact and, you know, nursing from a bottle if that's where, the direction that family's going in. But just, like, being around for, like, generally helping out at the family in general. Like, you know, hey, making meals, making sure the mom eats, making sure that the mom gets some sleep or is rested or bounces a baby. Like, you know, most kids have some sort of, you know, sleep issues when they're born and just, you know, just want to be held and bounced and making sure that, you know, mom and baby are both taken care of is the responsibility of the dad. And, you know, 10 days is not nearly enough of that. And then by telling them they have to go to work after 10 days, just tells them, like, relieves them of their responsibilities as fathers. Tells them that as a father, they're not valued. They're not as important as the woman. And yeah, there's important things the woman has to do at that time, but it doesn't mean that the men's role isn't important as well. And so men aren't held to the same standards. Kind of like the reverse conversation that we've been having a lot that, you know, women aren't, held to male standards and so they're not expected to perform. Okay, well, men in this aspect aren't held to, like, father standards to, you know, participate in their family. Therefore, it's okay for them not to perform and, you know, take part in, you know, family affairs, and that's not okay.
Yeah, the assumption is, well, isn't your wife taking care of that?
Yes.
That's the assumption.
Yeah, the assumption is, but if we change that assumption and make it okay for dads to be dads, for men to actually partake in their family and take care of their family, then I think we'll have some sort of a cultural shift to recognize how, you know, the burden the childbearing takes on the family, both for the man and the woman. And I'm not saying men aren't good dads because they go back to work so soon. That's not it. Like, you know, it's just they're not expected to take care of those children the early months or the early years. And so it's just so easy for them to sort of slough off all those responsibilities on women. And, you know,
it's awesome.
When the women, it's awful because when you're also telling a woman that you are in the workplace and that you need to take your work responsibility seriously and you need to put in the same sort of time commitment, and more in order to meet the new physical standards in order to compete in your work environment, yet when you go home, you have 90% of the, home responsibilities are also on you. Like, it makes it just an impossible environment for women to want to stay in, you know.
And, all right, I've got an email for you.
And I think...
Mac, I read Captain Serrano's article. I wondered if she could talk real quick about the concept of being mommy tracked. What is being mommy tracked?
Mommy tracked. It's a phrase. I didn't make that up. I've heard it from a lot of other female Marines. It says once they have kids, they kind of put to the sidelines. They're kind of like put out to pasture where, like, yeah, they'll retain them and, you know, continue to get promoted if they meet minimum standards or whatever, but, you know, don't expect much from them. Don't put them up for deployment. Don't, you know, expect them to stand duties. Don't expect them to perform anymore. And, hey, it's kind of like a foregone conclusion that once you have kids, like, right, you're no longer going to be a top performer. You know, having kids is now put you in the average to below average performer bucket before you've even had a chance to open your mouth. And that's kind of what mommy tracking is that, you know, every time you need to duck out of work because your kid needs to go to the doctor or, you know, your kid got sick and your kid got a daycare or something, you have to go take care of that. Like, you know, that's the mommy track. You know, you gotta kind of go down that path of mediocre performance. I think it's a real thing that it's unfair, but it's also realistic. Like, I'm not trying to say the Marine Corps needs to make all sort of concessions and make it the most female-friendly environment and, you know, account for everybody that wants to have kids. Like, we're a combat entity. Like, we're here to fight wars. And, you know, having Marines that are more concerned about their kids and their families than work is an issue. And maybe it means that maybe it's not the right place for women. Maybe women that want to have kids and families just shouldn't be in the Marine Corps. That's kind of a concept I've been wrestling with a lot in the last couple of years. It's like, you know, should I get out? Like, am I doing the Marine Corps a disjustice by staying in because I now have other priorities that make it so I cannot stay at work till, you know, 7, 8, 9 at night doing my job and come in at 4 every day? Like, right, you know, my immediate boss here is phenomenal. She's amazing, but she gets to work at 4 a.m. and stays until 7 p.m. Those are past, you know, daycare hours, and I just cannot perform that way. Therefore, my mommy tracking, you know, putting myself on the mommy track means I'm now restricted to working during these particular hours and, you know, can't raise my hand at the drop of a dime to go deploy or go do this, that, and the other. So maybe it's not the best place for women who want to have kids. I'd like to think we can make policies that will change that, because I think that there's a lot of really smart, amazing women who do have kids that contribute a lot to the Corps, and I think it'd be really a sad day for the Marine Corps to see a lot of their talent leave because they chose to have kids. But at the same time, let's be realistic. Like, our mission is to fight and win wars. Like, it's really hard to fight and win wars when you're, you know, ducking out of staff meetings to go nurse or pump, you know. I'm conflicted. I don't have a right answer. I don't know what the answer should be. I know women should be in the military and should be in the Marine Corps, and it'd be a detriment to a lot of MOSs to lose women, you know, especially those civil affairs sort of intel jobs. But I don't know. I don't have her answer, but the policies that I recommended in this article I think would make it easier for women to be mothers and Marines.
All right,
but
I've got another email for you. Mac, first of all, I've thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. I agree with the last email that you read relative to Captain Serrano's courage. These are things that we ought to talk about, and it's only through this kind of discussion do we learn that things like a leave of absence, unpaid, are things that the Marine Corps really ought to consider to retain its top-level talent and also to do right by their family. I think that would be absolutely appropriate. And I find it distressing that we wouldn't have this conversation in public for fear that we couldn't handle the truth. My question is this. Mm-hmm. Has Captain Serrano spoken with senior officers, female type, that have reached the flag level? And what advice do they give, or how have they done it? Have they not had children? How have they managed to steer a career to flag level and still had families, or do they simply not do that? So have you got input from general officers? Did they reach out to you?
So I think they simply don't do that. I think isn't there only like two female active duty Marine, like general officers right now? I know there's General Reynolds. And I think we just have we had another one recently get promoted to Brigadier General, but one, there's not very many of them. Two, no, I have not heard from many female generals who are still in active duty. And when I wrote that first article about women who shouldn't be in combat, I did have a female general officer at that time, who I think he was recently retired. She did contact me and say she's fully on board with everything that I was thinking and, you know, supports the cause but didn't want to speak out loud. But I know General Reynolds. I've never worked for her directly. I know, like, her background and, you know, first woman to command in combat in Afghanistan. She is an inspiration to women. However, she doesn't have kids. She's also, like, 6'3" or something in PT, like a man, which is I'm jealous of, you know, in certain ways because it makes her more competitive. And she doesn't have kids. I don't think she's married or has ever been married. You know, therefore, she can deploy at the drop of a dime and kind of, you know, have that autonomous ability to jump into any role that comes her way.
Right.
And I think General Salinas, too, who got out a few years ago, I did chat with her a little bit about being a woman in the military a few years ago. And she, again, didn't have kids. I think she might have been married. I can't quite remember. But I know that not having kids is sort of the standard, is that if you want to make general officer, do not have kids. Being married or not, I'm not quite sure if that's what the deal is there. But the highest ranking person I know of that has had, you know, several kids is Colonel Mary Reinwald, who, again, is a mentor of mine, has reached out to me, has been amazing in encouraging me to try and stay in the Marine Corps and, you know, representing the population of women that do want to have kids. And she was able to have 4 kids on active duty, but she said she attributed a lot of her success to having her children very early on in her career, where her get-reps weren't as important.
Right.
So when she had the kids, you know, she was a very junior officer, and so, you know, those whatever detriment it was to her unit at that time didn't matter. But for the majority of us who have kids when we're, you know, captains, majors, sort of like more of the pinnacle billets, like going into key billets, that, you know, being company commander, if you fail at that, you will never see the light of day as a lieutenant colonel. And that's sort of at the same time that most women are having kids. So it's kind of like, well, which one do you want? Do you want to be company commander and then go be battalion commander and make flag officer? Or do you want to have kids and, you know, peak as a major and maybe make lieutenant colonel and right at your 20? So...
I got another email question. I got two more, and then I'll let you go. Mac, I'm curious. Captain Serrano's thoughts about being a single mom. Being a single mom, you couldn't take a leave of absence because you couldn't afford not to have a paycheck. It seems like they are in the worst lot of all because they have to go back. They have to put their kids in daycare. Daycare is incredibly experienced. It's almost like being a single mom and service in the military is extremely incompatible, but I know a lot of women that do that. Does she have any thoughts on that? So, I don't want to say a nightmare because, you know, having children is the greatest thing that you do in your life. and
sure.
and so but certainly not the easiest path, and only gets harder if you're a single mom because you don't have anybody else to go get them. You got to pay the bills, and you're still trying to be competitive for a promotion.
Any
thoughts on that nightmare?
I do not ever want to be a single mom with kids, and those women that do that are heroic. And I don't know what to say other than the Marine Corps is not sympathetic to those kind of women that I've seen in the past. I have one particular example when I remember 5 years ago or so being stationed in Okinawa, and before I had kids, and I was not sympathetic to people that had kids before I had them because I had no idea what being a mom was going to be like. But we had a staff sergeant, and she was a single mom. I think her daughter was about 3, so still very young and very demanding and not independent yet. And we were going to MESX in Korea, and this staff sergeant got put on Advon, and she was going to be in Korea for a good 2 months or so. And so she made all the accommodations to have a family member fly out to Okinawa and stay with her 3-year-old for like 2 months we were going to be there. And it was, she did it all very quietly, like she didn't want to raise, like, you know, issues about it or whatever. This was her job, and she was dedicated to her job, and she was good at her job, and, you know, that's just what she was doing. But then when we were in Korea, we got extended for a couple weeks, and she was panicking because the family member that was taking care of her daughter back in Okinawa couldn't stay longer. And she couldn't get any other family member to come out, and it was going to be a big issue that we were stuck in Korea, and her 3-year-old daughter was going to be by herself in Okinawa and couldn't figure it out. And I just remember the command, or not necessarily the commander wasn't, I think, aware, but some of her leadership, and she wasn't in my direct leadership, but some of her leadership on the other side of the battalion, I remember hearing them talk, and they had no sympathy for her. And they were just like, this is why we have family plans. This is why you contact the foe. Like, what do you think is going to happen when you join the Marine Corps? Like, Hey, this is the Corps, you know? And they had absolutely no sympathy on the burden they were placing on this staff sergeant by extending her in Okinawa and, you know, her being away from her 3-year-old daughter. It was an awful, awful situation. And I wasn't very close with this staff sergeant. I didn't really know her or the details or her chain of command that well, but hearing rumors of it and how ridiculous it was that she wanted to go back early even though the, you know, unit was staying longer. And I'm pretty sure she got dinged on her fit rep for it, and her reputation actually was absolutely, you know, focused around her, you know, problems in being a single mom and needing to get back to her 3-year-old daughter in Okinawa. And, you know, I'm mad at myself for not standing up for her at that time or not understanding the position she was in. And it, you know, I didn't understand. I wasn't a mother yet. I didn't get it. And, you know, I don't really blame a lot of the male Marines around there for not understanding or not getting it either, because they don't participate in their families because they, you know, have wives at home or that are taking care of them or, you know, are not in that situation. But the Marine Corps is very unforgiving. The Marine Corps is a very selfish organization, because of the nature of our mission. And, no, I don't know the right answer. Maybe single moms shouldn't be in the Corps. I don't know. Like, it's hard. So I don't have the answer. All I know is that being a single mom in the Marine Corps is probably one of the hardest jobs around.
No, without a doubt. Lauren, let me ask one more email question. I, too, would like to salute Captain Serrano for her candor and her forthright discussion of difficult topics in the Marine Corps. I'm curious as to what she thinks about an institution that struggles to have honest, open dialogue about issues like this. It doesn't speak well for us as an institution. I'm curious about her thoughts.
Obviously, it doesn't speak well for us as an institution because, you know, you wouldn't have some Joe Schmo captain down here, you know, talking about these issues. You'd have our leaders who are paid to talk about political issues and, you know, the policies that would actually be having these open discussions. And it's pathetic that, you know, senior leaders can't speak out and speak the truth, that this dialogue has to happen, you know, in hushed whispers in the hallway. And I think it's also symptomatic of our society, though. Like, it's not just the Marine Corps that has this issue. It's, you know, nationwide, and all the services are dealing with it. And it's creating problems that it already has. I think it's going to continue to create problems. And until there's really, like, you know, the pendulum swings the other way, or, you know, we find some sort of balance in this, you know, political correctness world, then we're going to continue to struggle with it. And it's really going to take people, honestly, just kind of throwing their ranks and careers, you know, to the wayside, and to really have a discussion, an open discussion about it, until we can really talk publicly. And, like, for me, like, I'm kind of at this place where I'm not even sure if I want to stay in the Marine Corps.
Right.
I love the Marine Corps. I would like to stay, and I'm not sure. But if I get kicked out for speaking the truth, if I get NJP'd for being honest and, you know, having opinions on these topics that are incredibly important, then, you know what? That, it could be a blessing in disguise. It could be, you know, it could actually be, you know, the answer to my problems if the Marine Corps makes a decision for me on whether or not to leave, because I don't know that I have the heart right now to drop EAF papers. But right. Why does it have to take somebody to stop giving a shit about whether or not they get NJP'd and to stop putting their career, you know, ahead of sanity in order to have these kind of conversations? It's pathetic. It doesn't speak well of our organization. It doesn't speak well of our leadership or senior leaders. Like, I don't know why these discussions can't be more public. Like, you know, I guess I'm a good example in the fact that I haven't been NJP'd yet. I haven't been counseled. On the opposite, I've been praised for being honest and talking about these issues. Like, I'm still waiting for the day to get called into, you know, some senior person's office and, you know, handed my page 11 or, you know, whatever. But it hasn't happened yet, which shows that people are smart and people recognize that these conversations need to be had. You know, if I was some Lone Ranger, you know, smearing the face of the Marine Corps, or, you know, not talking on behalf of a large population that has been silenced, or, you know, speaking crazy talk, then I probably would have been NJP'd already. You know, I probably would have been silenced in some way, shape, or form, or kicked out of the Marine Corps, but I'm not. On the contrary, people keep encouraging me to speak more. I've actually had people email me topics that they want me to write about. So they say, hey, I'm not comfortable. They're like, hey, I'm not comfortable putting my name, you know, attaching my name to this issue because I still care about making battalion command, but hey, will you say this out loud, you know, will you speak on my behalf? Like, I've had that, and that's pathetic. But really, like, I just kind of stopped giving a shit about what other people think, or, you know, what other people, you know, are gonna do or say to me, you know, by being honest. And I just wish it was possible to have more people really be honest with themselves and with the organization and with, you know, our bureaucratic policymakers back there in the Beltway.
And so, one more email, a final question. When we talk about the backlash that senior officers would get that would jeopardize their career, could you spell out where that backlash comes from? So where does the backlash come from that they would not speak out? What is that?
I mean, I'm sure a lot of it was probably the previous administration. So, I mean, a lot of the senior leaders that do make the policy decisions, you know, answer to the White House, answer to, you know, Secretary of Defense, answer to, you know, the cabinet members. And our previous cabinet was incredibly different than our current cabinet.
Right.
And I've actually had very senior people over there in the Beltway that have, including me in some of the discussions on trying to change some of the previous policies to kind of reflect more realistic issues that we've been talking about the last couple hours. And those people will not give backlash to people that want to talk out. Like, I kind of have this almost like a bubble of people that are, you know, in senior positions who recognize the need to have honest, open dialogue, who I think would protect anybody that wants to speak out or that wants to, you know, speak honestly about these topics. And so I think some of the backlash would probably just really come from media and come from some of those feminist, very leftist, progressive groups. Those, you know, social justice warriors who have a very loud voice in the media today, or have a lot of, like, blogs and other platforms to get out, you know, the progressive leftist, you know, socialist sort of views, they might be kind of anti whoever speaks that out loud. It really just depends on who's in the leadership position and where you sit and what your billet is and, you know, who's above you. So maybe I'm just such a low peon that nobody cares about me, and, you know, who can listen to some, you know, low captain over there. And they can paint me as, you know, whatever they want because I don't have brass on my collar.
Yeah, but if you notice, there hasn't been a whole lot of articles written by males that have said what you said.
They have not.
Right. I mean,
and those that have gotten some hate mail, but I mean.
Right. And when you ask the question, that's to me what I would be more concerned about, is that if we can't have a vigorous debate about whatever we're talking about, from maneuver warfare to women in infantry, if we can't have a vigorous debate, then it's an indictment of the institution that you can't talk about these things. And so, again, in the midst of all of that, Lauren Serrano, Captain, United States Marine Corps, alone and unafraid out there, speaking what a lot of people would tell you is the truth. So, Lauren, first of all, I've kept you way too long this morning, and I just want to thank you for doing this. I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation, and I want to wish you all the best of luck in both your roles, and well, all three of your roles, as a mom, as a wife, and as a Marine in intel officer. And I hope you succeed beyond your expectations in all three, and I hope you raise good kids. So, which is the best, as I can tell you. But I think you very, very articulately describe the path that many women go down. And a lot of them resign that, you know, I have to give out, I have to get out, and this rush is maybe not the right word, this bias for us to recruit rugby players, lacrosse players, and wrestlers, does that marginalize the rest, women who don't fit that mold, do they still fit the Marine Corps? I think that that's a pretty substantive question that the Marine Corps has to ask. And then a woman, so as a second lieutenant, you go out and you're going to be an infantry officer. Okay. Are you going to do that again? Go back as a company commander and hump your company up Mount Motherfucker at Camp Pendleton after you've had a kid or two? It's going to be difficult. It's going to be difficult, and nobody is going to want to be at the front of that hike who can't hike, right? You can't be the slowest person in the company. Are you going to come back and do it when you're 38 as a battalion commander? I think those are hard questions, and there might be some that can do it. I would tell you they would certainly be atypical women, and yet it seems like the bell curve for women in the Marine Corps is being shoved in that direction to the detriment of many women in the Marine Corps, which is, I think, is one of your points. And is that what we want? Is that the right thing to do? Or should women that want to be in the combat arms, should they have their own separate physical fitness standard that approaches the male standard? And then when you leave that world, you can come back to the rest of us. But all of us aren't going to go with you, okay? That's not the requirement. That's never been the requirement. Mm-hmm. It's okay to be a woman. It's okay to have a separate physical fitness standard that's gender normed. It's okay for that. But if you want to go into that world has a standard, and it's this, and you've got to meet it. And so I don't know. So ultimately, what I think is interesting about the discussion is, where does this ultimately take us? Does the bell curve have to migrate, or should there be another standard if you want to go into this world that everybody doesn't have to meet, you know, that's a female in the Marine Corps? So, and you can't get there without talking about it, which is another problem. So, anyway, maybe for another day.
All great points.
All right. Well, first of all, again, thank you very much for coming on. Thoroughly enjoyed it, and all the best of luck to you. at One Meth, and I'm sure our paths will cross again. So thanks for doing this, Lauren.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time today.
No, there you have it. That is Captain Lauren Serrano. We're going to take a break. We'll come up, wrap things up. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military, for a first responder, for a hunter, for an outdoorsman, or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you, the Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum, it's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug, scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. Battlemug.com.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global SOF Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone.
One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
That'll do it on a Friday. Only about a half hour over. Read one more email. Mac, I do think it's pathetic. I absolutely agree with her that not being able to discuss these things makes the institution weaker. It was amazing to listen to her describe the number of senior officers that reach out to her and say, thank you for saying what we can't. Why can't they? Why can't they articulately describe their concern for the wrongness of this course of action? Is it simply the politics? Well, it's not going to change without credible people standing up and telling the truth. It's one of the things that has always disturbed me about senior leaders. They will look at junior leaders and say, do the right thing, keep your honor clean. And then when we look at them and say, tell the truth, talk about the 9,000-pound gorilla with asthma, and then in parentheses. That was pretty funny, actually. That's in the room that we're all pretending isn't there. Be articulate, as General Barrows was when he talked about it. Make sure you draw the lines appropriately. Because if combat is returning fire from a convoy, if combat is being a support element in a FET unit, then trust me, that ship has already sailed. But that's not what combat is. Combat is what Carl Marlanis did in the Central Highlands of Vietnam. It's what the 1st Marine Division did at the Cho Sinh Reservoir. It is ball-busting, back-breaking, physical work in shit conditions. What do we need to do that? We need able-bodied widgets capable of being replaced. And they need to be hard and tough, because that's the requirement of the battlefield. If our senior leaders can't tell the truth, then what in God's name are they doing in those billets? Do you think we suffered a little bit from that when only Greg Newbold resigned in the lead-up to the war in Iraq? If Moore had told the truth, what an idiot Rumsfeld was. And we never went to war in Iraq. Look at what a different world we'd be living in right now. And you really have to ask yourself, Colin Powell, his refusal to stand up and do what she's talking about, which is stand up and tell the truth. The refusal of other senior leaders in the Pentagon to stand up and do what Zinni, Newbold, and Ben Riper were talking about has got us here. I think we have a problem in the flag rank of our military. They are too often yes men, and too infrequently walking in the steps of Captain Serrano. Breath of fresh air today. Thank you for having her on. Thoroughly enjoyed the interview. Please have her on again. Semper Fidelis. On that, we'll end. Thanks for listening. You will hear Captain Serrano, and a little bit of John Kelly. You'll hear General Kelly's entire remarks tomorrow. You'll hear General Dunford's remarks in their entirety tomorrow. And trust me, it's awesome stuff. I'm not sure if General Mattis was there, Secretary Mattis was there. I'll find out. And if he was there, you'll hear him. So you'll hear the best of tomorrow as we continue. So having said that, have a great afternoon. This program continues momentarily. Don't touch that dial.